So we're going to bring in Dr. Tom Wold. He's the chief medical officer, Portsmouth Hospital. He also has some good news on the Keep the Lights Up for All Healthcare Workers. But let's start with an update, because one of my chagrins in this whole thing is I would like to hear more from doctors and people on the front line of healthcare, not always policy and politicians on this thing. But let's get to Dr. Wold. Dr. Wold, thank you very much for your time. GMI Studios and our network of news talk stations this morning. How are you?
I'm great. Yeah, thanks for having me on the show.
The governor just talked about touring some of the hospitals just as recently as yesterday. He said one of the things making the problem worse is staffing shortages. But can you kind of give us an update? And what I'm saying, doctor, is I'm sure you have a private life. And this weekend, if you're with family and friends and someone says, hey, doc, what's going on? How bad is it? What are we seeing? Are most of the people that are in the hospital unvaccinated, vaccinated? Is this what we expected? How bad is it? And let me start with that question. If someone were to ask you that this weekend, what's your answer?
Well, I think it's a great question. I think in general we are seeing, you know, unprecedented numbers as far as what we've seen historically from the previous waves here in New Hampshire. In particular, we are probably one of the highest per capita as far as number of new cases. And to your point, not all those cases are coming to the hospital. And certainly, in general, with vaccination is held up by keeping people less sick and less of them coming to the hospital. But the sheer numbers and certainly those that are unvaccinated that have been coming to the hospital, we are seeing folks not only coming through our ED with increased volume, we are seeing the strains on the hospital itself as far as having those patients in our hospital right. And in our ICU.
Wold, yeah. What are some of the symptoms if someone gets acute or needs to go to the hospital? What are they? Are they more in the chest? Is it a shortness of breathing? Is it an oxygen level issue? Is it fever or all the above?
All the above. And, you know, I think the early stages, the symptoms can be confusing because they can be as mild as a loss of taste and smell, or they can be as severe as really feeling it in your chest and having those respiratory symptoms. It generally has been when people do get more severe respiratory symptoms, that's when they come to see us. Luckily, a lot of them were able to treat in the ED and able to send home. But some do develop more severe illness. They require oxygen and need to come to the hospital. And luckily, you know, we have some other therapies. We've learned a lot along the line. So those folks coming into the hospital, we're seeing them get great care, and a lot of them are recovering. But there still are some that are getting more severely ill and are in our ICU. So
right.
And to your point, you know, I think it as we talk about the Lights Up for Heroes campaign, it has been a strain. It's been a continual strain, and you know, some folks have left healthcare from just the stamina of having to do this every day for 2 years.
Right.
And coming in on this one, you're absolutely right. We're all wanting to be more lighthearted and really want to embrace the holidays. But there is a lot going on in the hospitals where a lot of our providers, a lot of our nursing staff are having to raise their hands to do extra shifts, to do extra coverage for handling this surge. Yeah. So it is. It's really great for the public to recognize our heroes in healthcare. And it is the little things that really, really, really make a difference. So most of us are leaving in the dark and for work in the morning, coming back in the dark at night. And when we see the signs on the side of the road that are recognizing our heroes in healthcare, it really makes a difference. And those who have light shows that are so spectacular and really kind of warm everyone's heart, leaving those on so that our heroes coming home can feel that, really does make a difference. Yeah. And leaving it through January, where we may be seeing again the effects of Omicron, would really be just a great gesture from your listening public to bond on to this effort.
You listened to Dr. Tom Wold, Chief Medical Officer, Portsmouth Regional Hospital. Doctor, when patients come to you now, today, tonight, tomorrow, with symptoms related to which I think is probably larger the Delta variant, what are some of the treatments? You mentioned oxygen, but are you doing yet any of the antiviral type stuff, or are there some you know, treatments that might be prescription, like a pill, that are helping people get over the symptoms or not?
Yeah, so there's several options. It really depends what stage of the disease process you're in. So COVID really has three stages. It has the beginning stage where the virus is really replicating very rapidly. And that's when we can use different medications to sort of block the replication of the virus. So it has to be recognized, and we have to give that medication within a certain period of time of recognition. But that's one element. And then if you are into the respiratory phase, which is when you're requiring oxygen, then steroids, which are anti-inflammatories, are very effective. Mm-hmm. And then we have a few other therapies for if you go into the much more severe illness in the hospital that have shown some effect as well. And I think you're right. I think there's some promising medications coming down the pike, as far as Pfizer and Merck having an oral medication that may block replication that could be used as an outpatient.
Right.
Much like Tamiflu for the flu.
Mm-hmm.
And when that comes around, that's going to be a really important piece to treating people who are recognizing symptoms and may prevent them from coming to the hospital. So we're really looking forward to some of those coming to market.
Is prednisone one of the anti-inflammatories that you use for respiratory?
Yeah, so either prednisone or something called Decadron, they're both very right. similar. They're both steroids,
right.
which are anti-inflammatories. Absolutely.
Doctor, I want to ask you, for the current load right now, and I don't know what Portsmouth is at, but the governor, maybe it's come down a little bit, but it's been, let's just say on average, over 450 people statewide in the hospital with any respiratory-related, COVID-related type stuff. My question is, from the beginning and to this point here this morning, and Dr. Wald, we really appreciate, I think our listeners appreciate hearing from a medical doctor versus, no disrespect, a politician or someone who's not a medical professional. I think that it's amazing how everyone's been an expert. Doctor, I don't know if you appreciate this, but someone said to me once, you know, Jack, God forbid if you have a heart attack or a major surgery or cancer, you don't hear from, you know, United States senators and mayors and all these other non-medical people on how to care for it. Everyone's got an opinion on this one, it seems, but you can comment or not, but yeah. I like hearing from you. My question is, are the majority of the people in your hospital now this morning who are battling COVID symptoms, are the majority unvaccinated, and do you see any trends on underlying comorbidities or not? Because one thing that's amazed me on this virus as it's varied is it kind of affects everyone differently. It's not all the same. So are the majority unvaccinated, which would bolster the argument for getting vaccinated? And number two, do you see any underlying comorbidities? Because I've heard like body mass index, weight, or diabetes, or heart disease, or other respiratory. Do certain things make this worse?
Yeah. So absolutely. Great questions, Jack. So I will tell you, we are on par with what we review with the state every day. With all the other hospitals. So 75% overall in the state are unvaccinated in the hospital. About 25% are vaccinated and having what we would call breakthrough cases. And to your point, it has varied over time as far as risk groups. Certainly there are risk factors as far as obesity and diabetes and underlying cancer diagnosis or immunosuppression.
Right.
All those are definitely risk factors across the board. It is interesting with Delta as far as risk groups, where we used to see predominantly older folks presenting or people with those comorbidities, really across the board, Delta in the unvaccinated really affected younger folks to a larger degree than we were seeing before, and not necessarily with all those risk factors.
I heard that. I heard that someone who's pretty much ordinarily healthy who got the Delta variant had a harder time with it.
Yeah.
At a younger age.
So I think.
Yeah.
And to your point with Omicron, I heard you talking before we went on air that there is some hint that it thankfully may be less severe, but it does look like it might be shifting back to those folks that may be at risk, meaning the elderly and the immunosuppressed. And certainly the folks that have been vaccinated but not had the booster, that seems to be a significant risk with where we're headed into the next couple of months. So one thing for sure, just to make sure everyone appreciates that, if you have been vaccinated with two shots, or the J&J, as you had mentioned earlier, for sure, it really is important to go and get that third shot, because that really offers that protection against severe illness and hospitalization.
Right.
And if you think of not only what you can do for our healthcare workers as far as giving them a boost over the holidays with the Light Up for Heroes, everyone doing their part and really reducing their own personal mm-hmm. risks, so that they aren't coming to the hospital and contributing to the, you know, the are being overwhelmed. And right. and that certainly is getting a booster. If you've been vaccinated with two shots, if you haven't been vaccinated, it's a great time to talk to your doctor and see if you can work through some of your concerns with the vaccine. And as we go in to the holidays, certainly respect everyone's autonomy and choice as far as masking. But certainly if you're in high-risk situations where you're around crowded people that you don't know their status, it certainly makes sense to add that extra precaution. We are doing universal masking in the hospital because, of course, it is a very high-risk area.
Yeah.
But I encourage people to mitigate their risk as much as they can and get vaccinated if they haven't.
We have a couple of listeners, and we have to run, Dr. Walden. We thank you and your healthcare
sure.
workers. Keep the lights up for all healthcare workers. But a quick question that came in from two different listeners. How long after you're fully vaccinated should you get the booster? They're confused. How long after? So this person said mid to late September they got their second Pfizer vaccine. How long after should they get a booster?
Yeah, so right now the recommendation is if you got either Pfizer or Moderna, it's 6 months after your second
okay.
shot.
Okay.
If you got J&J, the protection is almost needed immediately. So there's no time okay. restriction at all for J&J.
All right.
And you get a significant boost from the J&J protection to one of the mRNA vaccines, which is either Pfizer or Moderna.
All right, Dr. Wolf,
and
thank
again,
you so much. Go ahead.
Yeah, you're welcome. Yeah, it's been a pleasure talking with you.
We'll get you back again soon. This is one of the more informative interviews I've had in months on this. Thank you, sir. Appreciate and thank you for everyone.
Okay.
And please let everyone know there. We appreciate what they're doing.
I will pass it on to everyone, Jeff, for
thank
sure.
Thank you, Doctor.
Thank
Dr.
You.
Tom Wold, Chief Medical Officer, Dr. Wold, Portsmouth Regional Hospital.